At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini, folks. We have a very special treat tonight. Of course, this is Illini guy Mike Kegley, and we are going to talk about a lot of things. Going to go through some college realignment or alignment, depending on what your point of view is. We're going to talk about NIL, talk about how the future of club sports is, talk about fan access to our favorite college players, and even a little bit about the international students. And today, to talk about this, I have Adam Cook with me. And those of you who aren't familiar, he is a former collegiate student and athlete. He has a background that ranges from strength and conditioning to sports leadership and education. Now, here's where it gets complicated, folks. You know, Adam is the director of athletic development and partnerships and a professor at Northwestern University's Master of Sports Administration program. So you're probably thinking to yourselves, why is he talking to an idiot like me? Well, you know, Adam has a lot of interest, and then slumming it with guys like me is one of his hobbies, apparently.
Adam, I'd hardly call it slumming. Yeah, thanks for having me. That's very flattering. I'd hardly call spending time with you guys on the Illini guys slumming, that's for sure. It's always a great conversation.
Well, it's good to have you, and I'll tell you what, this is going to be an exciting time, because we are living in a time where there's probably the most change in college athletics since Newt Rockne started getting on a train and going across the United States with Notre Dame.
Yeah, or Title IX at least. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This is an interesting time to be living in, for sure.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about, because conference alignment has been one that friends of mine have had to listen to me talk about extensively. To be honest, even since I was a kid in the mid 80s, Sport Magazine and the Sporting News would talk about what would happen if, you know, the conferences realigned a little bit. And of course, we had the one that I think kind of changed everything, and I think it was a wake-up call maybe for the Big Ten, was when Oklahoma and Texas last year went to the SEC.
Yep.
And I don't know about you, but when you look at Texas's academic standing, you look at its sports, it really, other than you know, that and Notre Dame are like the two people that you're like, these are the perfect fit for the Big Ten. And under the cover of night, all of a sudden one day there's an announcement they're going to the SEC.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think about that when that happened? Because to me, that was like a wake-up call for everybody that this competition was going to heat up again.
Yeah, and I think that was a little bit of, you know, maybe some bold plays by Texas and the SEC, both of trying to kind of cement themselves as leaders. You know, we saw there's, you know, the Big Ten media days happening right now, and Kevin Warren's talking a lot about this stuff. And you know, he's saying a lot of what he wants to position the Big Ten as is a bold, actionable conference. And I think that, you know, these are not conversations that happen and then, you know, 2 or 3 months later, all of a sudden there's a shift, right? So I think that was just a little bit of maybe the first mover, a little bit of the writing on the wall of, okay, this happened once. We see a lot of things that are a lot of dominoes that are going to start falling in the future. So, I don't think anybody was really surprised by it necessarily in terms of what realignment would look like. Yep. I think it maybe a little bit of the timing, but I think it was more than anything else, just a confirmation of like, all right, following the almighty dollar, and it's going to be a little bit of an arms race here, more blatantly than it has been in the past.
Yeah, I can't prove it, but I almost felt like the Big Ten was kind of lulled a little bit. And then all of a sudden they saw that happen, and that gets the creative juices going on, like, where we should go. Now we can talk about, I'll be honest with you, I had a discussion with some execs at, you know, Fox Sports, and, you know, they're kind of like, well, you know, we didn't have anything to do with it, you know? And it's like, well, maybe UCLA, USC, you know, would be something that we could say, you know, Fox helped maneuver. And then you also have to wonder, you know, is ESPN has their hand in this, as they are ACC, and, you know, they also obviously do the SEC. Do you think things are going to be stable for a few years now, or how do you see this playing out? You know, now that we've got the two camps with two additional schools that are very prestigious, what do you think's next?
Yeah. Obviously nobody has a crystal ball. Right. If we did, I don't think either of us would be sitting here, chatting on a radio show. We'd be on a beach somewhere in Tahiti. But, you know, I think in terms of stability, I don't know if there's going to be any semblance of stability in collegiate athletics for the next couple of years. And I mean, I think that's across the board when you're talking about the NIL stuff, which I know we'll get into later, talking about conference realignment, talk about grant of rights, media rights, all of these types of things. None of those sit on an island. Right. And so you can't have any stability in one of those areas while having a bunch of chaos happen in another. I think a little bit of, you know, maybe the straw that broke the camel's back, if that's, you know, the analogy we want to use, was all of a sudden the shift in the NIL landscape opening up a lot of the floodgates of the competitive side of what it means to provide opportunities, earning chances to earn money while they're in school. And one of the biggest ways to do that is to have financial resources to back all of your different initiatives. We all know that the number one place that athletic departments' financial resources come from is their grant of rights and their media deals. And so I think it's going to be, you know, a little bit of a, I don't want to say land grab, but it is going to continue to shake up in terms of people wanting to position themselves and institutions wanting to position themselves in the most competitive place moving forward. And I think a lot of commissioners are going to have to ask themselves some tough questions. And I think a lot of presidents and athletic directors are going to have to ask themselves some tough questions as well. You know, do you want to be a perennial conference champion in a mediocre conference, or do you want to be somebody who's middle of the road in a conference where maybe you're getting an extra $50 or $65 million a year that you can kick to your operating budget? Those are tough questions to answer, you know?
Yeah. And look, in real life, how many people could walk away from the deal? You know, UCLA was having to look at the option of canceling and stopping certain sports. And then they're looking at getting a deal that themselves and USC allegedly were going to make around $30 million, give or take. And they were getting a bigger portion of the pie than their peers at the rest of the conference. And yet you look over at the Big Ten and you see Illinois and Northwestern making over $50 million a year. And then you're hearing, you know, anywhere from $75 to $105 million in a new deal. And again, you're talking about telling student athletes, we're not going to do this sport anymore.
Exactly.
Did I mean, realistically speaking, did USC and in particular UCLA, did they really have a choice in this?
No, and that's the thing, you know. So my wife's family all live in Southern California, so they're, you know, they're big SC fans, and you know, he's talking about, oh, geez, you know, here we go playing football games in Minnesota, going out to Penn State in November, and
finally,
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But you know, when you look at it from what your realistic options are, I think you make a good point, right? If you're a good leader, which I would say you don't get to be a Power 5 AD without being a good leader, you have to look at, you know, some of the holistic implications of your decisions. And if you've got a choice between realigning with a conference or cutting sports from your programs, you know, I think the choice is kind of made for you. So I don't think anybody can fault, you know, the direction that some of these realignments are going. If you really want to be upset, you could say, why have we created a system where one sport, you know, basically one or two sports decide the fate of the rest of the, you know, athletics department. And that's, you know, that's a whole can of worms that we don't need to get into today. But in terms of faulting or being frustrated with specific ADs or institutions, I mean, the decision's made for you. It's a no-brainer, right? You got to keep your programs alive. You got to provide opportunities for student athletes across the board to compete. Because there's a lot more that goes into being a student athlete and having the opportunity to compete rather than just like the prestige that goes with it, right? At the end of the day, this is an opportunity to pursue a degree. Right. So yeah, I mean, the choice is made for you, basically. If those are your two options, either realign or cut programs, it's not really a choice.
Yeah, and I keep thinking, you know, when I look at these guys, you have to go where the dollars are. And to be honest, the American public votes with their eyes. You know, you can look at it and you see the NFL rules the TV ratings, and they mm-hmm. do it every year.
Mm-hmm.
But then the what if comes in. Well, what if college football had a 16-team playoff that's going to generate 15 games and you're going to have multiple weeks? All of a sudden, does maybe the NFL won't get less viewership, but maybe college football will get more. Mm-hmm. And maybe they move up to where they're much closer second place to the NFL than they are right now. You know, to me, I look at this as two things. And I think Jim Delaney was the one, and this will kind of take us into the TV rights a little bit, but Jim Delaney back in, you know, 2010, you know, talked about if you had 70 or 80, you know, P5 teams, if they had, you know, four conferences or five, he never seemed to care about the exact number of conferences. But if they all had their own networks, they wouldn't have to go to a CBS
right.
who makes enough money on the basketball that they can write a check for $1 billion with a B.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, that's what we pay Brad Sturdy at Illini Guys. So, I mean, that's big money, right? You know,
yeah.
So basically $1 billion with a B, if they've got the money to write a $1 billion check, how much are they making?
Right.
And I remember listening to, you know, reading excerpts of what he had said, and you kind of had to connect the dots a little bit. But, you know, I saw it where in the long run on the basketball side, they were going to go after a maybe wouldn't because you only got, you know, 70, 80 teams. You may have a 32 team tournament. So you cut out 32 teams. But the fact that you don't have to divide that 275 ways, and then you could run it out of your own conference TV.
Right.
So the better seeded team, you could do it on the Big Ten network or, you know, who cares? You put that money into a pool, sell your own advertising, and you don't need, you know, how much money could you make? Could you make $1.5 billion off of that? And between the increase in revenue and the decrease in people you have to share it with. And of course, at that time, nobody was really thinking about what if you had a 16 team football thing, because those numbers would be unbelievable.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's where, you know, when you talk about kind of the whole ecosystem, you know, a lot of these streaming networks, a lot of the technology platforms that are in place, they've kind of democratized a little bit of the opportunity there of, hey, I'm not beholden to the three big networks, and this is the only way that I can get my product out in front of our fans, right? And so you kind of put a little bit of leverage back in the people who actually are the product, right? And then, you know, you're talking about these conferences have $1 billion operating budgets, right? So, hey, how can we be a little bit more creative with our $1 billion operating budgets? And obviously a lot of that's coming from those media rights, but it does start to get down this really interesting and convoluted rabbit hole of different levers that you can pull in terms of generating revenue, but, you know, use this word again, but even creating more leverage for yourself. And, you know, this is where the NCAA has gotten themselves into an interesting position with, you know, the SEC kind of saying, hey, we're going to go do our own thing, where before, well, good luck. But now it's like, oh, shoot, you know, we've seen leagues spin up their own streaming services and be successful. So, you know, that's a realistic possibility now.
Yeah. And I go back to, again, I got to give, I know Jim Delaney, you know, he makes mistakes like every other human being. But in this particular area, the stroke of genius was to do like a 6-year deal that he signed, because he anticipated that the technology would change enough.
Yep.
That would bring in competition, that if you did that ACC style contract, you were going to be leaving so much money on the table, it was sickening. And he's proven to be almost prescient in his ability to predict this part of the thing. Now, he was also great friends with Ron Gunther, who did nothing for Illinois athletics and almost killed the football program. So the man's not perfect, but I tell you what.
None of us are.
Yes, yes. But he was incredible at setting the Big Ten up for success. And Kevin Warren, you know, I'd love to be in that position, because – you know, he's got a great property now that he can kind of attract other people.
100%. And that I think is an incredible way to put it, is, you know, Big Ten as a conference is an incredibly hot property, from a competitive standpoint, from a positional standpoint. And, you know, to your point, we can talk about collegiate athletics being, you know, amateur sports, but we all know they're run very professionally. And look at what's happening with a lot of the professional leagues right now. You know, Major League Baseball is striking a deal with Apple TV, which is, you know, a cloud-based streaming service. The NFL has struck deals with Amazon Prime to do Thursday Night Football and things like that. So not only do you have these other streaming services or broadcast platforms in place, but the other side is that their technology and the way that fans consume the content on them is pretty compelling as well. I mean, look at what's happening with the PGA Tour. You know, you're watching their competition put out some pretty interesting broadcasts. So the landscape is not what it used to be, you know, 5-6 years ago at all. It's changed very significantly. And at the time when a lot of collegiate athletics has just been turned on its head, it's an exciting time to be living through as a collegiate sports fan, for sure.
So now let's change your hat. Now let's say that you are you know, you're the Big Ten commissioner, and you're Uh-oh. Sitting here, you're looking at the environment. I want two questions from you. What size of Big Ten conference are you eyeballing in your mind's eye? Are you saying, you know, 20 teams, 28 teams, you know, how many teams do you see? And then what teams are you, Commissioner Cook, which teams are you going to go after first?
Yeah, I think, so what size of team, you know, that's such a nebulous question. I think, you know, I think 20s for 28, I mean, at what point then, when you've got a conference that's that large, do you as a commissioner have to start just from the logistics of managing it, starting to say, all right, now I've got to break this down maybe into some regions or some, you know, some different sort of divisions, which I would go back then and say, what's the competitive advantage of having a conference that large when you're just going to break it down again anyway, right? I would foresee, maybe this is the ceiling on my leadership capabilities, yep. But I would foresee a little bit of a ceiling or a rate of diminishing returns, right? Where you get so big that you've got so much to manage and you start to leak out opportunities. So, you know, I think 20 maybe is fair, but honestly, I think they're in a good spot right now with the number that they're at. Now in terms of competitive programs and schools, I would like to maybe see there, you know, I think Notre Dame is a no-brainer. You know, that's great. They're the prettiest girl at the dance right now. They're in a wonderful spot. Do I think that's going to happen? Honestly, no, I don't. If you're Notre Dame, why would you commit to that when you don't have to? You know, from a total program competitive standpoint, I think Stanford's a pretty hot property right now. You know, they're a competitive football program. They still bring a high level of academic integrity to the conference as well. You know, you get a little bit of that LA market, but you kind of expand into the Northern California area as well. I think, you know, Oregon's a little bit of an easy answer as well, but Washington, I think, is a pretty interesting addition. You know, there's not much up there. You got a great fan base, a good competitive program, and a holistic program over there as well.
Yeah, I tend to be a 24 guy. I think if you bring in Stanford, Washington, Oregon, and Cal, you're up to 20 teams. You've mm-hmm. got a group out there where they can compete, and they're around one another. So your travel costs are yep, obviously yep. established and not out of whack. And then you look back east, and of course, if I'm doing it, I'm going after North Carolina hard.
Yep.
Trying to get North Carolina. If I have to take Duke, fine, we'll take Duke. And then Notre Dame, like you said. And then here's where I'm gonna roll the dice, because I'm still a little bit the old TV market guy.
Sure.
Balancing that with brands. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm looking at it from a TV standpoint and brand, I'm trying to entice either Texas A&M to leave the SEC or Texas to come before they ever get there.
Yep.
And if I can do that, now I'm up to 24 teams, and I can do 4 6-team divisions, or I can do 6 4-team divisions.
Yep.
Whatever the, you know, you can kind of see what people want, you know, at that yeah. point. And then you go into a scheduling that models the NFL a little bit, where you play everybody in your division more often. So you've got those rivalries, and then you play the other sides, and you know, the it'll be a challenge because you're not going to have a balanced schedule, and you're not going to play everybody that often. But that's what I would go after. And if I'm the SEC, I'm calling, you know, again, and this is why I'm a little bit more of a kamikaze type of commissioner. But if I'm the SEC, I'm calling up, even though the money right now with that $100 million that the Big Ten talks about is hard to compete with, but I'm still probably calling Ohio State and saying, look, guys, you're really an SEC team. Come play in the big leagues with football. And I, you know, and I would really try to do that to
yeah.
start, you know, my era.
Clemson wouldn't be a bad addition either.
I'm not bought in that they've got a lot of TV eyes though. You know, I just, other than when they're really good, you know who they are in my book? They're Nebraska. If they're yeah. spectacular, they've got then again, if you're 11-1, who doesn't get good ratings? You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
I'm a little bit on the fence on them. So I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just a little yeah. bit on the fence. So that's one, the big thing, like I said, so you can see there's some ground that's not real solid there, as people are, you know, the college ADs and presidents are trying to move their way forward. So now NIL. Now we hear about NIL, and it's basically three things that we're hearing about NIL. One is for football players, mm-hmm. the second is for basketball players, and the third one is WWE signees. But now that Vince McMahon has retired in shame, there may not even be that. So now we're back down to football and basketball again.
Yep.
So yeah, you know a little bit about this subject. So what do you think here?
Yeah. First of all, I apologize. Got a fire truck going right by my apartment here. But yeah, so like you mentioned at the beginning, you know, I'm director of athlete development and partnerships for NIL at Campus Inc. So, you know, we're in this space. I'm fortunate enough to kind of double dip a little bit, where, you know, it's what I do for my day job. But then, you know, in my academic pursuits at Northwestern, you know, I get to play a little bit of that theoretical side as well. And I always joke around with my students. It's fun on that side of the table. I get to lob up some interesting questions, but you know, you're right. And I would say it's a little bit ad nauseum. That's about all we hear about, right? Like football and basketball, and that's fine. You know, that's what drives revenue and keeps the lights on and things like that. But it is really interesting from a media perspective, just how much of the conversation is around how it impacts football and basketball players, and particularly how it impacts a very small percentage of football and basketball players. Because, you know, what we see on a day-to-day basis and what we try to do at Campus Inc. is provide holistic NIL opportunities through merchandise. So we provide, you know, whole campus solutions. Doesn't matter the sport you play in. Doesn't matter, you know, what year you are. Doesn't matter how good you are. We provide an opportunity to earn, you know, money through your NIL through merchandise. And so, you know, I have a little bit of a horse in this race of understanding the fact that it's so much bigger than endorsement deals and quite frankly, the garbage that gets thrown around for clicks on news and things like that. And, you know, you even hear coaches talking about, oh, well, it's legalized cheating and, you know, it's all this stuff. At this point, you know, being a year into it, if you can't come to a place, and I understand that, you know, there's an old school perspective and all that, but if you can't come to a place where you can understand or at least see the fact that a college athlete should have the ability to earn some money.
Exactly.
As a result of how their name, image, and likeness is leveraged, then I don't know what to tell you, because that conversation is not about, you know, a 5-star recruit who's in high school getting a Lamborghini or a Porsche given to him. That conversation is about, if you're a student athlete, whatever you play, should you or should you not have the right to earn money off of your expertise? And if you're a collegiate athlete, you're in the top 3% of the nation in what you know how to do and what you're capable of doing. What other industry, what other avenue, what other channel do we take that top percentage of experts and completely hamstring their ability to earn money? You know, it's a fascinating conversation. I'm really excited to chat about it and dig into the weeds a little bit, because it does have wide reaching implications across, you know, football and basketball for sure. But it just goes so far beyond that, that I don't think you can ignore the basketball and football piece of the conversation. But if you stop there, you know, you're barely scratching the surface on what some of the opportunities are, but also what a lot of the problems are around some of the legislation and guidelines that are in place right now.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see, because I even look at it from the standpoint of all this focus and money spent on realignment of the conferences and then going towards basketball to a lesser extent, football, a greater extent. If I'm running the MLB, am I a little bit worried about 15 years from now with this weight going, you know, the scales of people's habits being built and the thumb is getting put on football and basketball so much that I'm like, if I'm running another sport, it's got to be a little bit scary.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's always a good question to ask, right? Like, not where does this go in 3 months or a year, but where does this go in a generation, right? And yeah, I mean, the thumb is definitely put down on football and basketball, but I'll say, you know, a little bit from the inside of what we're seeing in terms of the merchandise is, you know, we've got baseball players who are doing great in the NIL space, right? We've got softball players who are doing awesome. Women's soccer, swim and dive. Like, there are people who are doing really well. And that term is relative, right? What really well means is relative. But they are finding a path forward. And I think that going back to our conversation around athletic directors and commissioners having to be really good leaders and thinking holistically, most of the institutions that we talk with understand that. And they're, you know, they're not blinded to the fact that while they have to keep lights on and provide yeah. opportunities for, you know, the money makers, it doesn't stop there. They're not dumb. And so holistic opportunities are really, I think, where institutions are going, which is a good thing.
So where do you see, like, we always get scared when the legislators say, well, we're going to help, because then they pass laws and then we're like, wow, that was what you call help. So where do you see some of the pitfalls right now that maybe the legislators have kind of they've zagged when you thought they should zig?
Yeah. In full disclosure, I'm not a lawyer.
We don't care. We can play one. This yeah. is Illini, guys.
Yeah. But you know, I think the first misstep was in, and it's still there, but like not having some sort of federal legislation in place. And that's not on Congress. I would say that's on the NCAA. Like, I think it's also important to remember that what we're sitting here talking about is college athletics, right? We're not talking about the war in Ukraine. We're not talking about, you know, yeah, like gas yeah. prices. I think it's important to have a little bit of self-awareness when we're lobbying Congress and about these right. sorts of things, is like, where does this fit on your priority list? So, you know, I don't necessarily fully put it on state or federal legislation, but some sort of, you know, blanket understanding of what is allowed and not allowed, I think, was the first big misstep. You know, in Illinois, we had some of the most restrictive NIL guidelines in place for a while. Yep. And fortunately, our governor very quickly amended those things. But we saw last year how it puts you a little bit behind the eight ball. Right. Because, again, what we're talking about is not necessarily inducements. We're talking about just an ecosystem where you're allowed to provide opportunities for your student athletes. And it doesn't have to be a recruiting inducement to be a valuable piece of your student athlete experience. When you enroll in an institution, University of Illinois has one of the greatest engineering programs in the country, right? Yep. They've got fantastic facilities. They have fantastic internship opportunities, and they have fantastic career pathways to some of the best engineering firms in the country, because of what they provide to their students when you're enrolled. Providing an opportunity to earn money, not handing over dollars, but providing the ecosystem for your student athletes to be successful in this NIL space is 100% a part of the student athlete experience, a part of student services, and something that the universities should have been allowed to put into place from the get-go. In Illinois, they weren't. We saw some other states where they were, and this is where you're seeing a little bit of that, you know, the scales being a little bit shifted. You know, Cam Cox, the NIL director at Illinois, he's brilliant, has a really good head on his shoulders, has a great perspective of where things should go, and you guys are lucky to have him. But he put it this way, where he was saying, look, you know, if you're looking for an internship, you go to the Career Center. As a student athlete, if you need help with your school, you go get a tutor from the athletics department. If you need help finding a place to live, you go get help from the athletics department. If you are struggling on the court or on the field, you go to your coach, a member of the athletics department. You don't know what to do in the NIL space, or if a contractor's good or bad, all of a sudden you can't go to the athletics department and ask for help. Like, I think that was the biggest misstep from the beginning.
Yep. And for those of you who follow Illinois athletics, Cam Cox could be one of those unheralded MVP candidates, and people don't understand how his role is so important, because he is working with groups like the Illini Guardians to make sure that things work. He's working with Campus Inc. to make sure that this is a benefit both for the student at University of Illinois, but also trying to anticipate. Of course, if the NCAA could actually do something, you wouldn't have to try to figure out the future, but he's also trying to make sure that these things stay within the intent of the rules as they look to fall in the future, so that the University of Illinois wouldn't be in a problem due to things like what you're seeing at Miami, where everybody's going to be paying 100%. A certain amount of money that has nothing to do with anything. Just you get money because you're an athlete, which puts a real, I tell you, you're walking on thin ice there.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, I think another kind of scary place as we move forward is, you know, some schools are doing it really well. Some collectives are doing it really well. But, you know, you've got two other entities that are popping up seemingly at will, both collectives and agents. And, you know, you can use both of those terms loosely, with really without any checks and balances. And again, I think it goes back to, you know, what are the foundational missions of an institution? Number one, it's to matriculate students, right? Like, you exist as an institution to graduate students with your degree. The second, I would say, and we're all here because we love this part of collegiate athletics, is to win games. You want to bring natties back home, right? Like, that's the point. And so in order to do those two things, you have to have some sort of checks and balances to make sure that the students that you're trying to matriculate and the students that you're trying to help compete at a really high level are taken care of. And there's a lot of, I'll say agents or agencies, that are taking significant advantage of student athletes who don't have help or know really what the space is about. Yep. And there are a lot of collectives that are doing this, the same thing. I will say Illini Guardians is not one of them. They are doing a fantastic job. But you know, I'm not going to say that's the exception, but there definitely are a lot of places where it's spinning up in a very predatory manner.
Yeah. And anytime I hear like 30% going to an agent,
it's ridiculous.
You know, I mean, the only sport that happens is boxing. And if you get compared to boxing, then, you know, you're going wrong. You know, when the person that you're being compared to is Don King, it's like, okay, yeah, maybe we should head down a different path. You know, it's interesting. And I got to be honest with you. I get a kick out of Nick Saban complaining. Because here's a guy who is, I don't even think it's arguable anymore. He's the greatest college football coach of all time.
Of course.
But let's face it, when you're the boosters down there and the recruiting stories that people can talk about with shoeboxes of cash, et cetera. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. And when he got into a situation where the field was level in the NFL, that didn't take long for him to decide, I'm going to go back where the deck is stacked. And I'm not blaming him.
No.
You know what I mean? I would do the same thing.
Sure.
But ultimately, what I've always looked at the NIL is it allows people, let's you know, you can pick a billionaire who's graduated from U of I and who lives in Silicon Valley. Pick one. There's a dozen or so.
Mm-hmm.
that billionaire is not gonna try to find a way to squirrel away cash. Put it into some sort of box and put it in the mail or drive it or whatever.
Yeah.
He's not going to risk his good name or her good name and reputation and get in the crosshairs of the IRS. But they are very capable of going to Illini Guardians and say, how can we do this in a way that's going to be good for the athlete, good for the University of Illinois, good for my name and not mm-hmm. embarrass me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Nick Saban's terrified of, because if you go and take a look, you know, you go to Google and you hit in University of Illinois billionaires in Silicon Valley, that list is pretty darn impressive. And mm-hmm. or just University of Illinois billionaire alumni. And you know, there's a lot of colleges that don't want to compete with the huge land-grant colleges mm-hmm. who can flex their muscles in this in a way that a business person wouldn't be embarrassed or wouldn't get himself in trouble or herself in trouble. So if I'm Nick Saban now, I'm going to University of Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Illinois. Yep. You know, it's like, I don't want to think about that. You know, Texas.
Yeah.
I don't want to think Texas A&M. I don't want to think about that, because they've got people on that other side who have no problem, and they can pay a lot more than the guy who put $10,000 in a shoebox.
Yeah. And, you know, it almost puts back into the ring a little bit of the institution's ability to graduate successful students, right?
Exactly.
And I mean, again, the conversations around saying you've legalized cheating and all this kind of stuff, to me, they just come across as a little bit disingenuous, because it's pretending that things like that haven't been happening in collegiate athletics as long as they've existed. So, I mean, let's be a little bit, you know, have a little bit of intellectual integrity there in our argument. But the other thing too is, you know, if we really want to die on the hill of amateurism, okay, well, let's make a definition around, you know, what's professional versus amateurism. And if you want to, you know, draw the line in the sand around getting paid, well, okay, then you're a pretty darn professional coach, I would say, with your multi-million dollar contracts. And why are you wasting your time coaching a bunch of amateurs if it's really that mediocre, right? Like,
yeah.
If it's just amateur football, let me go coach, right? I've been around sports a little bit, but no one's going to do that, because we all recognize that this is a lot more significant than just a bunch of people running around as amateurs.
Yeah, well, and it is funny. Excuse me. It is funny when you start looking at some of the things, you know, Kirby Smart doesn't want his players, making large amounts of money, or doesn't want in general players getting a lot of money, yet he's willing to sign for $100 million. Yeah. So apparently coaching those players is totally okay. But those players, you know, somehow earning the dollars gets really, really interesting. And the other thing I do like about the NIL is it does kind of it should at least allow players to have a little bit of agency in how they make choices and stuff, as opposed to, you know, you've got to stay in the good graces of one particular guy. And if you don't, you know, your money's cut off, your scholarship could be gone.
Exactly.
And to me, again, I think, to be honest, the first thing I think of is coaches can move instantaneously and go to the next, the highest bidder without any issues. So
yeah.
why, again, I'm not saying it's easy or to monitor or maintain, but why shouldn't players get treated very similar to the way the coaches are?
Yeah, and you said a lot of good things. I've got three things to fire back at you. I'll try not to ramble on them too much. But, you know, the first is NIL is not new, right? NIL, name, image, and likeness standards and legislation have been in place forever. It's just that they've changed now. And right. So when I was a student athlete, I got talked a lot about NIL and photos and videos and what I can and cannot do. And there were, you know, I wasn't even a revenue generating athlete, and there were posters the size of my upper body on the wall in our stalls and above our urinals, without being too, you know, too graphic, telling you all of these things you cannot do. And, you know, at some point it's like, well, how much agency do I have over my experience here at all? And so the shift has just been, you know, not that NIL exists, but just that you can monetize it a little bit. But, you know, the other thing that I wanted to touch on was the NCAA right now is talking about amending some of their transfer rules, right? And we don't need to go down that whole rabbit hole tonight. But I think it's an interesting thing to think about when you talk about the stipulations that are on student athletes when they transfer and in conference versus out of conference, and what, you know, their eligibility requirements and all this kind of stuff are. You know, if you transfer schools, if you're, we'll use the engineering example again, if you're an engineering student and you transfer to Stanford from Illinois, you don't have to wait a year to participate in student services.
Yeah.
Right. If you're academically eligible, you are eligible to participate in the student services. Student athletes, if you transfer or whatever, all of a sudden you're blocked off from participating in these student services, which is fine. But if you're going to treat the student athlete differently, who is academically eligible but ineligible to participate in student services, you're admitting that they are a different class of student than a traditional student. So either treat them differently and give them opportunities to monetize their NIL, pay them, whatever, or say, no, you're just like every other student, which means that when you transfer, you can participate in all of the things that the school offers immediately. I don't know another way around it. Either they're different or they're not.
Well, and you're using logic, and that never works. So, you know, when you're dealing with the NCAA, I mean, look, you know, I could go through a litany of things at the NCAA. I mean, they've seen this NIL thing coming since I was a kid. You know, you could have very easily in the 1970s said, you know what, if this guy wants to, if we want to sell his jerseys and the jersey costs $40, give him $2.
Yep.
And you know what? That probably would have shut the door to most of this crap, because people would have said, hey, you know, Adam sold 10,000 jerseys, $2. He should get his $20,000, and nobody would care.
Yep.
Instead, they bottled that up. And then, of course, you had the money making machine of video games, and it blows up all over the NCAA.
And I kind of think about it in this way. Nobody really has a problem with money being made through sports, right? Because the institutions are making a ton of money through broadcasting the sport. Coaches and staff are making great money through executing, producing the sport. And that's fine. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be paid. That's great. So it's not about making money through the production of the sport. It's not about the amount of money, because we have admitted that this is $1 billion, you know, operating revenue of the Big Ten is $1 billion, right? We've got $1 trillion broadcast deals in place. So it's not these like large amounts of money, but all of a sudden you get this third party, the student athlete, that starts to get into there. So it's not about money being made through sports. It's not right. about a lot of money being made. It really comes down to who's making the money. And again, you know, that's just, if you're going to be intellectually honest with your argument, like, let's say, well, we just don't like the fact that our students are doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just leave it at that and call it a day.
Yep.
Well, and then you talked about, you know, some of the other areas of some of the club sports. And of course, you know, Illinois has a fantastic history in that area. So why don't you talk a little bit about some of the implications and how maybe this is a little bit further reaching and has more tendrils out there than your average person's getting from turning on ESPN and thinking about, you know, this is what's going on with basketball and football.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, wheelchair basketball at University of Illinois does have a fantastic history. They're an incredible program.
Yep.
I gotta tell a little bit of an aside. I was visiting my sister-in-law in Colorado Springs, and we went to the Olympic Museum there, which is unbelievable. Highly recommend if you're ever in the area, well worth the time. But we're going through the Paralympic part of the museum, and sure enough, big section on the wall dedicated to the University of Illinois, because the first wheelchair basketball team to participate in the Olympics was all Fighting Illini. So wow. It was a really cool thing. And I think as somebody who loves sport and loves not just like the competition aspect of it, but what it provides from a societal standpoint, what it demonstrates in terms of societal change and opportunity and giving people the opportunity to raise their station a little bit. You know, I think that when we talk about collegiate athletics and NIL and opportunities to earn money, that's a really important piece that has to get rolled up in there. You know, a lot of sports that we love, football being one of them, started off as these kind of club sports, club athletics, right? And because there were opportunities to progress and advance and gain notoriety and have more people watch, all of a sudden the snowball starts to build. And so, you know, when I look at NIL, when I look at more money being put not just into athletics departments, but into programs across the athletics departments, that's the thing that really excites me is, you know, where's the wheelchair I had a conversation with a wheelchair basketball athlete at University of Illinois last week. And he's thrilled to be selling his merch, and he's got some great ideas around how maybe he can do some licensed things and some custom things. And again, that's the stuff that gives me chills, right? That's the stuff where you're like, this is how it's done right. When you look at holistically across a program, taking somebody who has traditionally been marginalized or who competes really hard in the thing that they do and gives them an opportunity to tangibly benefit from it. That's a wonderful thing. And so when we look at, you know, the different Paralympic sports, when we look at Olympic sports, you know, swim and dive, women's lacrosse, field hockey, that's where my mind really goes in what's the rose colored glasses of the future of NIL. It's providing more opportunities for people to stay in school, for people to, you know, eat well, pay their rent, get their gas money while they're competing at a high level. And who knows, you know, maybe one day you'll see them on NBC in the Olympics and you're like, oh, I didn't even know that was a collegiate sport. Now they're representing the country wearing gold medals. So I just think that there's so much farther reaching of an opportunity here, that if we can get it right, can be really special in the long run.
Yeah. And if you can get more people, you know, to get an opportunity to get into college and not walk away with a ton of debt, that's always a positive. And I will say that down in SIU, I was on one of the better intramural basketball teams, and one of our players challenged the wheelchair basketball team, one of the teams that was very good in that. And we played like a 5-minute quarter, and I think we got beat 24-2. I think we got one basket, and we were all in good shape and everything. But my gosh, I mean, we found out that that's a whole different world. And it was just like, we got absolutely destroyed to the point where they were nice to us like the last minute, because they might've got the 30 in that 5 minutes. It was just, they were all over us. It was just, we were just absolutely run off. We were run off the court in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
Anybody, if anybody ever gets a chance to watch that sport, you have no idea how hard it is when you add to basketball, the fact that you've got to, you know, maneuver that wheelchair, and you have to do it at a high level of dexterity, speed, and you have to have precision. That precision. Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like, it was,
not to mention getting banged into.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how many turnovers we had, but it was, I think if somebody was using a clicker, they were in triple digits. Because it was, wasn't good.
And I was talking to Sean was his name, and you know, we're sitting there chatting, and I mean, could not be a nicer kid. Yeah. He's from Chicago, so connected about that, which was great. He's got an incredible story, but I mean, he's in incredible shape. I mean, just cut like you would not believe, and unsurprisingly, like a collegiate athlete, because that's what he is. He's a collegiate athlete, right? And so, you know, when you think about, we talked at the beginning that this is probably, this NIL era kind of turning collegiate athletics on its head. It's probably the biggest impact or the biggest change since Title IX. And what did Title IX eventually or essentially do? It provided a much wider path into college for women. That was functionally what it did, right? It opened the doors a lot wider for people to pursue their degree in their higher education and all of the wonderful things that come after that. NIL is another opportunity for that, like you said.
Yeah. Anytime people can get an education, I don't care. When I say education, you know, I don't care if it's an apprentice program, you know, to learn a skill in the trades, but anytime you can find a way to open doors to people getting that opportunity to learn and get that whatever part of life it is, you know, people go into the military and learn some fantastic things that really change their lives. So I don't care what it is, but boy, anytime you can give somebody the gift of knowledge, however they attain it is fine, but that's something that can never be taken away. So the NIL, it seems like if maybe people change their perspective, they might understand that it really does open a lot of doors in the long run for the good of society that we won't be able to measure.
100%.
Yeah. You know? So now let's go on to the darker side of things, because this is something that, you know, if for those people who don't get the opportunity to meet with college athletes, and I'm sure it's probably worse at the professional levels, to be truthful with you. But one of the darker sides of college athletics is the way some fans go after collegiate athletes on social media. And it's really our radio show, the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular, that people can hear on 30 different signals throughout the state of Illinois. You know, we really do. We presume grace for the athletes and the coaches who are participating. So we assume that a player is not going to shoot a three if they'd known they were going to airball it. We assume that coach is not going to go for it on fourth down if he knew they were going to lose 20 yards on that play. So, you know, obviously there's people maybe who are less talented or less skilled at their job than others. We get that, but we assume everybody's going to is giving it their best to win. But this whole, the fans expect to be able to communicate with athletes, and they expect to be able to air like every grievance from their life. You know, if you know you're in a job that you're not happy with, you didn't get that promotion, your wife left you, and so now I'm mad. Dog. Yeah, I'm mad that, you know, so and so missed a shot, and so I am going to just take aim and fire. What the heck? Just give me your thoughts on that, because you see it from a unique perspective, because you're dealing at Campus Inc. with the athletes, you know, directly. You're teaching, you know, at Northwestern with the student athletes and the students. What's your thoughts on this? Because this is a much worse problem, in my opinion, than most of the people who are going to say, yeah, well, when I was a kid, I was so tough that you could, you know, whatever. and so I really, you know, it was tough. I'll tell you, I had a play in high school, and I was a wide receiver. We had a different quarterback than I had practiced with all year. Mm-hmm. We had one play where the ball got sent to me. I'm looking to run under it because the starter was Mr. Touch.
Mm-hmm.
Turned my head kind of slow. Hadn't even had a chance to practice because the injury happened after the Thursday final practice,
yeah,
or at the end of the Thursday practice. So I haven't even practiced with this quarterback very much at all. And I turn and I get hit in the helmet by a late, like a Vince Evans
laser. Yeah.
It was a perfect pass, right? I just didn't know to expect it was coming. And you're a kid,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I missed it. We lose that game.
How dare you?
Exactly. Well, we lose that game. Trust me. I was a junior. So the whole senior class, that was the only game we lost during the regular season. And it was my fault, which is fine. But it was hard season to get through when you've got that. And I don't have 5,000 people calling me an idiot on my social media to deal with. So what are your thoughts on this phenomenon of social media and fan access?
Yeah, it really is, you know, I like to think that it starts from a good place. And what I mean by that is it starts from a place of, you care about the team,
right?
And you care about the result, and that's fine. I think where it flips and becomes a problem is when you can't, you don't know how much you should care, or you don't know when you should stop caring, right?
Right.
And you know, I also, social media didn't really exist when I was an athlete. I was right ahead of it, but the first couple of years of my coaching career, and then while I was in strength and conditioning, you know, it was really starting to blow up, and Twitter had been around for a little bit. Instagram was just kind of starting, you know, Facebook, to date myself, cleanly. Facebook was basically my freshman year of college. You had to log in with an EDU address. That was the only way you could get an account. So it was kind of right at the beginning of all that stuff. And so I've been able to see it, you know, from my own experience ahead of time, but then watch the transition. And I think part of the root of the problem is the fact that it democratizes access, right? And so we've talked about this a little bit, where because you can DM somebody, or not even DM them, because you can tweet at them, you almost feel like I can talk at somebody at any point in the day and say whatever I want, right? It democratizes this access where before, you know, somebody drops a pass or misses a three, what are you going to say to them? You have no way, you know, get in touch with them. And now you have an avenue to kind of air your grievance directly. And it's, you know, I think it's compounded when everything that these student athletes post about their lives goes to the social feed. And so it kind of reinforces this little bit of, I know you, right? It reinforces a little bit of like, you know, I see you interact with your family. I see you around campus. I see you do all these things. So you get this kind of inaccurate feeling about knowing that person and you really don't. So it democratizes access. But I think the other thing that happens is it also democratizes expertise. We are constantly bombarded by news and analysis and what should have happened and what shouldn't have happened. And when you're a super fan and you watch this, you know, nonstop, and you're scrolling on the ESPN app, and then you watch SportsCenter when you get home, and then you're watching YouTube highlights, and then you're watching the, you know, post game, and you all of a sudden start to feel a little bit like, yeah, I know those things too, right? Like I'm also an expert. And so when you have the democratization of access and you have the democratization of, you know, so-called expertise coupled with this perceived personal grievance, it creates a really dangerous environment to essentially personally attack, you know, that person. And the sad thing about it to me is when we throw all this money and we throw all this broadcast and production quality behind it, it really does feel very professional when at the end of the day, you know, these are very young athletes, very talented, you know, very polished, but very young athletes who, you know, for those who are coming from their high school and maybe going into a Power Five school, coming to Illinois, which is, you know, a basketball powerhouse, it's the first time that they're on this big stage and, you know, and getting talked at by 15, 20,000 people at once. And, you know, I hear a lot of times people say, well, turn off your mentions or, you know, just don't look at it. Are you kidding me? Just don't look at your phone. You know, I can't think of a day in the last 10 years when I haven't looked at my phone or whatever. Well, delete your social media. You really want them to delete their social media? You don't want to follow them anymore. You don't want to see what their life is like. So you get into this kind of tough spot where you can't turn it off. You can't avoid it. And I think as fans who hopefully want to see the success of the sport and success of the sport industry move forward, we have to take a little bit of personal responsibility around what am I doing to create this environment here and see where the culture of sport moves forward? You know, we saw just this last year, 6 or 7 collegiate athletes, you know, take their own lives, and the pressure, the demands, you know, a lot of times the hate, it's a very serious problem that I think we're going to have to address, or I know we have to address moving forward.
Yeah. And I've often thought, what you really almost need to do is, and it would also create some jobs for maybe people in communications majors or marketing or, you know, one of those majors, is I almost think that you let another college student run your social media page during the season. Mm-hmm. Now, I just think that it's like almost like something you've got to do that, or maybe you brand out everything that, you know, during the season you have social media, but it's your Kofi Coburn at, you know, U of I.
Yeah.
One, yeah. And your other one you let go dark, and at least you got some, you know, you get some space. I haven't thought that through yet, but I will, don't you think the hubris, this is what gets me. And again, I've coached AAU basketball for years, and I've had parents come up to me and they'd say, hey, you should have done this. And I'm like, you know, that's a pretty good idea. I don't know that it would work better than what I did or wouldn't have. I don't know, but that's pretty good idea. Maybe I'll try that the next time. But ultimately, you know, one of the things that we do different on the Sports Spectacular is when we say I would have done X versus Y, we never assume that because we're going to do X that works. I mean, it's an alternative, right? So Coach B took a ton of heat last year for, you know, punting the ball, you know, when he did. again. And I'm like, you know what? I don't think I would have punted there, but I might have went for it on fourth down, had my quarterback fumble the ball, and they run it back for a touchdown. And now everybody's like, what an idiot a coach he is. So it's so hard. Everybody would say, well, yeah, you should have punted it, you idiot. So there's some part of this. There's a part of America that right now is just contrarian, that you know what? Yeah. I just think that, you know, whoever did this, that was bad. I would have done differently. And it's almost like, you know, one week they're an expert in viruses, and then the next week they're an expert in the spread offense. And then the next week it's shooting form for basketball players. Yep. And then after that, it's, you know, history in Russia and how the, you know, Russia and Ukraine have dealt with each other. And I'm just like, wow, you guys are experts in a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think back to the Seahawks, you know, Super Bowl against the Patriots, right?
Yes,
Pete Carroll,
yes,
Marshawn Lynch, you know, yep. And he elects to throw last play of the game. And everybody's just raking him over the coals. Lambat, you have Marshawn Lynch, what are you thinking? And I thought that same thing. But I was really struck by his response in the press conference afterwards. And I don't know if you or any of the listeners remember, but somebody asked him a question, and good for them. Hey, well, you know, why didn't you run it with Marshawn Lynch? And his response was, did you expect me to run it? The reporter said, well, yeah, I did. He says, exactly. Why would I do exactly what the defense expects me to? And so it's that, like, other psychological, you know, warfare that you don't think about, these coaches having to play, you know, chess, and these athletes having to play chess. And the other thing I always tell, I would tell parents when I would coach, you know, the other team's pretty good too. Yeah. You know,
they want to win.
Yeah. We didn't execute that play perfectly, or that person missed that pass, or they got blocked or whatever, but yeah, that other team, they're pretty good. They practice a lot. And that hubris piece, I think, is a really interesting thing to bring up too. Cause you know, think of your heroes that are legends, Hall of Famers, you know, younger generations, but you know, guys that are still on social media, but competed at the highest level, did it the best they could. Are they on social media ripping everybody every day? No, they're not.
So, not very, 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 very small number. Very fall few into of that them. Category.
Yeah.
And the other part that happens is I often wonder, is Stephen A. Smith, is that a character?
Yeah.
Or is that Stephen A. Smith? Because, you know, I'm going to go to another sport, but when you watch pro wrestling, you know, is that Hulk Hogan? Is that Terry Bollea? Is it the same guy? Are there layers of overlap? And when I watch people on the air, I don't think there's very many guys out there like Howard Stern that are who they are, and they let you see it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things that we've thought at Illini Guys is that we're just going to give our opinions. If it's not smart, it's not smart, because you know. But and we're also, you know, going to kind of say, hey, look, I gave my opinion, you got yours, we're all happy, we can get along.
Totally. But
I do think there's, when I was, and unfortunately, I wish Facebook was my era, but, you know, I was long before that. I was back when, you know, they called it the greenhouse effect, not climate change. So that shows you how old I am. But it's just interesting. Back in those days, there was always that idiot who was in the barbershop, who was getting his hair cut, and he was just a constant stream of consciousness that was wrong.
Yep.
You know, he remembered that Lou Henson, you know, coached at UCLA before he got to Illinois, and you know, and you were just like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And then he would get up and leave, and everybody would laugh about all the dumb stuff he said. And now he might have 120,000 followers, and they actually think that what he says is
accurate. Yeah.
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 And I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the thing that's unfortunate is this is also a topic that nobody really wants to hear about, right? Like nobody they want to keep yelling about their thing and be right and whatever, because understanding that there are different perspectives and different ways to win and lose games isn't sexy, right? Like if Stephen A. Smith went up there and talked about what he really felt was good analysis and whatever, instead of screaming and yelling, like he probably wouldn't get many views. And I think, unfortunately, that's how we feel when we put stuff out into social media as well. Like, oh, this is how you have to be seen. If I'm going to put something into, you know, out onto the internet, it's got to be as sensational and as hot take as possible. And, you know, be darned if it's hurtful or, you know, hateful or whatever. I think what I would really like to see moving forward is, you know, we've got media days going on right now, right? There's so many opportunities for the conferences to kind of take a little bit more of an active approach and say, hey, we've got all the players here, right? Let's put some easy low hanging fruit campaign together. This is actually an idea of our PR guy, at Campus Inc, Sean Allenby. He was an SID at Maryland. And this is what he said. He's like, it's so easy. You know, this is what he did. He managed the social media and PRs for the men's basketball team there. And he saw this every day. And he said it was one of the hardest parts of his job was having to help these guys navigate it. And, you know, he's like, why are the conferences not addressing this? This is a massive problem. This is something that's new, right? It's generationally relevant that nobody else has had to deal with before. You have everybody here. Everybody loves listening to the players. Let's have them talk about how meaningful it is and how important it is and how hurtful it is, right? Like that's such low hanging fruit. And I just have to give a lot of credit to Sean for that idea and just seeing the impact of, you know, not a heavy lift from us as fans or the conferences, but a massive positive return when you look at kind of the long arc of mental health and success of your student athlete. Not to mention, if you want them to win, you want them to be good between the ears. Right?
I'm with you. I'm totally with you.
Like, and come that's on, man.
That's the part that just mystifies me. And it does, like I said, as a guy who was, I was one of those athletes that the coach said, you got more out of your athleticism than anybody else. And that generally means you have no talent. So, I was like Pete Rose. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I was whatever I needed to do to win. And
you're going
to
do it.
But the problem is, and I always listen to this when people go, you know, he doesn't have enough heart. And I said, well, hey, from the guys who had a big heart department, which I was like the poster child, I'll take the talent any day of the week.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, right? Up,
I remember one time just playing, you know, you play against guys who are better than you. There was a guy down at SIU. His name was Kai Nuremberger. He played on the SIU team during the late 80s, and he was also on the German national team. And, you know, I was 6'1" and, you know, 200 pounds, great shape. I could play basketball. And he was like 6'3" and kind of hefty. He just didn't look like he was in shape. And I remember I would always guard him out on the courts when we would play. And I remember he shot one and I missed blocking his shot by an inch. And I told him, I said, I'm getting it next time. He just smiled at me. And we did it again. And I jumped a little bit higher and he jumped a little bit higher apparently. And I missed his shot by a half inch. And I said, I told him, I said, I got it timed up now. I said, I'm getting the next one. I put everything I had into it. I missed it by the same inch that I had missed it by, and he hit nothing but the bottom of the net. So when we were done, there were three trips down court. He scored 9 points. I played as good a defense as I possibly could. He still had 9 points.
He's saying, I'm barely jumping.
And he's just doing what he needs to do to get by. And so, yeah, to me, it's like you need your athletes to have that edge. They need to be thinking in a game about how they're going to win and how they're going to beat the opponent the way Kai was doing to me. And then and you don't need to have the doubts of somebody who knows nothing about it, who probably, like I said, if you could pull them out of the basement and from whatever computer they're typing at, you would be like, why do I care about that individual
exactly
opinion?
Yeah, yep, exactly.
It's crazy. So one last thing before we're out of here, and I apologize for keeping you this long, but this has been fantastic.
It's a great conversation. No need to apologize.
International student athletes, they're not eligible, at least as I understand it, originally for NIL.
Correct.
What obstacles does that put in their way? And then is there a way to clear the path so that somebody can get over to the U.S., get an education over here, and have an opportunity to maybe better his family? And I think, you know, I'm a big proponent of it. If you can get a student who comes to the U.S., sees the heart of American people, and gets to understand what your average, you know, American is, which is, you know, you care about other people, you want to help out. That's what America is. It doesn't get shown on news, but that's what America is. And then that person can go out and they go back to their home country and they say, this is what they're like. To me, that's invaluable. How can we, what can we do to help that?
Yeah. So a big part of the reason why, well, the reason why they can't earn money as a result of their NIL as an international student athlete is based on their visa status. So they're on an international student visa, which prohibits them from working outside of the institution, participating in any earning activities. And so, you know, if this problem, because it is that, it is a problem, is going to be solved. I think the easiest path forward is really just the NCAA coming to an agreement, and now we're kind of back to this little bit of a federal legislation around some sort of an exemption around international student athletes, which, shocker, again, we have to categorize that student athlete as a different class of student than, yep, you know, a traditional student. So that's really what the issue comes down to. And after listening to people who are a lot smarter than myself and up on these things, word on the street is that change will be coming. You know, we talked at the beginning of this conversation around some of the major missteps. And I think that was a massive, like, how did you not address this from the beginning, right? When you talk about the percentage of international student athletes that are there, you know, it doesn't matter if they're from Canada or Mexico or Taiwan, an international student athlete is an international student athlete. And so if the point of the legislation in shifting NIL was to provide opportunities for students to earn money, you have alienated a massive portion of your student athletes. And sure, if you're going to look at Power Five schools and basketball and football, probably not that many. But again, as we've established, it's a significantly broader population than just those two sports. And there is a large amount of international student athletes here. And so I would say that it actually even strengthens the reasoning to shift it, because those are athletes who probably aren't on full scholarship, probably aren't playing fully funded sports, and need the additional opportunity. So, you know, I think it's one of those things that really just kind of disappoints me in terms of how badly that was missed and how long it's taken to get close to a resolution. And it's really put those students at a disadvantage, because, you know, they're almost untouchable. Nobody wants to sacrifice somebody's eligibility, get in trouble. You know, and you start messing with student visas and you get it revoked, you might not get that back.
Right. And to me, you know, it goes back again, you've got opportunities here to, you know, if nothing else, figure out a way to like allow them to put it into a trust. Or something, you know, where at least then they're still earning the dollars. They're not using it. And when they're done as a student or they go back home, they have the opportunity to utilize those funds, which again, they went out and earned. You know, it's not a collective where we're just dumping wheelbarrows of money on people.
Yeah. And it will be, I believe it will be passive participation, right? So it still won't be active participation. And there's classifications of visas for a reason. You know, there are a lot of rules that are in place on purpose. And so I'm the last thing I am advocating for, whatever advocate for, is let's just blow the whole thing up. Who cares? Do whatever you want. Right. But there does need to be some sort of allowances for things like that. And so, you know, when you talk about what the difference between active and passive participation is, passive would be, you know, you're granting the rights to your NIL for someone else to use, and you're not actively promoting it. You're not making appearances. You're not posting anything on social media. It's a true passive revenue stream where someone else is leveraging your NIL. So that's most likely what the path forward is. And I'm grateful that we're getting there. I hope, you know, I don't know what the timeline on that is, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel, finally, for international students. And so, you know, I think, again, it's just another opportunity for NIL to be done right. And that's all anybody really wants is this isn't going anywhere, right? And so let's find a sustainable path forward. Let's find a path forward where student athletes, local businesses, and the institutions can all win and benefit from this. because it really is an opportunity. And I really liked what Kevin Warren said. I think he said it today or yesterday. You know, he's like, look, change really is an opportunity. And for those that are in positions of leadership, they should always want to look at change and challenges as opportunities to improve. And that's where we're at. And so I'm excited about what's on the horizon. I'm excited about people that are at the reins for the most part. I'm excited that there's some guidelines and legislation coming into place, because it kind of eliminates a lot of the bad actors and leaves the people who are in it for the right reasons and have appropriate solutions. It clears the pathway for them to move forward. So yeah, I think there's good things on the horizon for sure.
Perfect. Well, I tell you what, I got one more question for you, then we'll wrap up. Tell people, or maybe not a question, more of a request. Tell people a little bit about Campus Inc. and what you guys are trying to do, because it's a pretty neat organization. And I think a lot of people may not understand what you're doing, but once they do, they'll be like, oh, and they'll start noticing your presence out there.
Yeah. So Campus Inc., we're a decorated apparel retailer and wholesaler. So we are very good friends of the University of Illinois. Our company was founded in the late 40s, just outside of campus. As campus grew, we actually ended up being right smack dab in the middle. We yep. still have the lab on campus. Our production facilities are in Urbana-Champaign. And in addition to, you know, providing merchandise across campus to the Greek life, we also provide NIL merchandise solutions. And so what we're building out is holistic merchandise opportunities for schools. You can find us at illinois.nil.store to find all of your NIL merchandise. You can find us at Game Day Spirit. You can find us in State Farm Arena, all of our jerseys. What we're producing and trying to make happen is exactly what we've been talking about today. So holistic solutions for student athletes to sell merchandise, any sport, revenue generating, non-revenue generating, you know, freshman, COVID year grad, there's a merch market for everybody. So we're taking that solution and scaling it out across campuses across the country.
Perfect. And shoot that address one more time.
Yep. You can find us at, illinois.nil.store or campus.inc.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Adam. It was a fascinating walk through a lot of the areas that the ADs, coaches, players, college presidents are trying to find their pathway through, and the ground is shifting. But I think University of Illinois is in a great place with leadership Absolutely. Like Josh Whitman, Cam Cox, then you throw in, you know, Brett Bielema and Brad Underwood and the rest of the coaches that Coach Whitman's put into place. I feel like in the 80s, there was a T-shirt that we used to see all the time. The 80s belong to the Illini. And I feel like we are getting into an era when we may start seeing the 20s belong to the Illini. So it'll be a fun trip to see where we go on this.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the conversation. Always a pleasure. Really appreciate you guys. This has been a blast.
Perfect. So, folks, you know, the Illini guys, we have the Illini guys Sports Spectacular. We talked about that. You can go to IlliniGuys.com, click the radio button, and you can find the 30 signals that we have across the state. You can find what day, what time, and what station you can listen to us. Please, what we ask you to do is, if you like what you hear, please, please, please call up your station and thank them for having the Illini guys on the air. That means a lot. Secondly, of course, we have a family of podcasts, not just Eye on the Illini, but we also have KEDS Recruiting Roundup that gives you what the kids, the coaches, and the parents are feeling from their side of the fence. It's fascinating. And of course, Sturdy for 30 is our legendary Illini Uber insider, Brad Sturdy, his podcast. Be looking for that as well. And finally, Eye on the Illini is fueled by IlliniGuys.com. You can go there and get a free 7-day trial for a year subscription. And it is just $99 a year. And if you want to know what's going on in Illinois sports, you go to IlliniGuys.com. Thank you so much, and we will be back again with Eye on the Illini.
At your job,
Do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.